And the God who designed your body to heal itself has just appeared to you again. Don't be put off by that simple human exterior. He has just proved who he is by doing what only God can do, healing the sick. That's why that leper is now whole. That's why his fingers did reappear, and his nose did reappear, and his ears did reappear. And that is why the people of the time believed in Jesus Christ. They saw it happen, and they recorded it. And their testimony is evidence. There's no evidence that he did not do it. Plenty that he did. If all the evidence is on one side, there's only one intelligent conclusion. If you come to the other conclusion, it's not because you're scientific or intelligent, just prejudiced. But now, the miracles carry a third message. When Jesus turns water into wine, he takes something that is very, very ordinary. Very common. Not very expensive and not very exciting. And he makes it really special. And the picture that he's showing is this. As that water was put into his hands and under his orders poured out in the service of people, the ordinary stuff became special. And the problem with millions of people right here in our most affluent society, with kinds of privileges and opportunities and education and toys and entertainments that other generations never knew, and other societies have never known. People are bored, and life is tedious, and they're looking for some kind of new thrill all the time, and some more expensive toy to replace the last expensive toy because they're tired of it already. And lives are ordinary, rich but ordinary. And they're so bored, you can't even live with the same people. But put that ordinary stuff into the hands of Jesus Christ, have it poured out under his direction in the service of others, and the ordinary becomes special. And Jesus is saying to you and me, he's saying, look, you've seen what I can do with water. You can see how I can turn water into wine. Now will you give me your life and let me pour out your life in the service of mankind? And as I pour it out, you'll discover that all the boredom will disappear. And the greatest adventure you've ever known will begin. When he feeds the 5,000, he takes the pathetic and he makes it sufficient. And takes the pathetic resources of your life and of my life, and in his hands the pathetic is sufficient. A couple of years ago, I was having some meetings somewhere on this continent. And they started on a Sunday morning. It was in church. Sunday morning, Sunday evening, Monday, Tuesday. I was ready to quit. Nothing was happening. It was terribly frustrating. Just all the meetings were just dead. It was like talking to a sponge or something. It's just absolutely nothing bouncing off. I was staying in a home where the lady was particularly strong-minded. And I mean strong-minded. Her husband did as he was told. The kids did as they were told. The dog did as it was told. I tried very hard. And when we went to church, it was just the same. And this lady was the organist. And it was a very powerful organ. And when she played it, whatever tune I picked, I mean, whatever hymn I picked, the tune she played always resembled the one I knew, but they were always two or three notes different. And she played that thing so loudly that even with a microphone, I couldn't even begin to compete with it. And sort of every fifth or sixth note would be one I didn't expect. Now that was bad enough, but there was one thing that was actually louder than the organ. That was the lady herself. Not only did she have a very strong mind, she also had a very strong pair of lungs. And she sang, and she had such a volume that she actually was louder than the organ. And when she sang, the tune she sang wasn't quite the one that I knew, neither was it quite the one she played on the organ. You know, every fifth or sixth note was different from both of those. And after a couple of verses of the first hymn, I gave up. You know, there's just no point, even with a microphone, there was no point in trying to compete. And as I looked around the church, everybody else had given it up years ago. Now, on the Tuesday night, after the meeting, as I was just contemplating the wisdom of going back to Britain, she made a statement. She said, "Do you know the whole world's sick?" I said, "Excuse me, what did you say then?" She said, "The whole world is sick." I said, "Is it?" She said, "Yes, it is." I said, "What do you mean?" So she started talking about Northern Ireland and people blowing each other up, etc., shooting each other. She went on at great length. She'd never been to Northern Ireland. She didn't actually know anybody from there. Of course, she did know everything about it. And so having told me all the problems of Northern Ireland, without offering a remedy, she said, "You see, the whole world is sick." I said, "Look, that's not the world, that's just Northern Ireland." So then she began about Israel and the Arabs. Went on great length about them, and she said, "You see, the whole world is sick." I said, "No, that is the Middle East." So then she started on about you lot, the juvenile delinquents. Boy, what she didn't say about you. I wish I had her here. She really gave you a bad time. She said, "You see, the world is sick." I said, "No, that's the young people." So then she began about divorce statistics in the United States. And she said, "You see, the world is sick." So I said, "No, that's just a certain section of the population." Well, then she went on about crime statistics in the United States. And she said, "You see, the world is sick." I said, "Hang on. You have convinced me. I'm convinced. How about you?" "What? How dare you? And in my own house as well. Nothing wrong with me. If the whole world was like me, it would be a wonderful world." I said, "Do you mind if I tell you something? If the whole world was like you, I would get off it." Now, I will not pretend that she thanked me for that remark. She was very upset. The rest of my week there was very embarrassing. About 6 months later, God really dealt with that lady. It's now just about my favorite home. She is so sweet and so gentle. And the impact on that church needs to be seen to be believed. But Jesus kind of caricatured a very common attitude. You see, plenty of people tell me the world is sick. There's nothing new about that statement. I expect you've heard it as well. You probably agree with it. But just about every time, if somebody tells me the world is sick, and I say, well, how about you? Oh, I'm fine. You know. And I'm left with this amazing mystery of a sick world with no sick people in it. Isn't that interesting? Do you think the world's sick? Or is it quite healthy? If the world is sick, who are we talking about? Somebody else? See, I believe the world is sick. Once you say the world is sick, who are we talking about? This person, right? And that person. And every one of us suffer from a sickness which is called sin. And it's worse than leprosy. Because it not only kills physically, it kills eternally. It contaminates every relationship that you ever make. Everything that you do is contaminated by that disease. My most special relationship is my marriage. Been happily married for 18 years. But even that relationship is contaminated by sin. Not so much mine, of course. But it is. And it shows itself in all sorts of ways, like petty selfishness. See? Now, in the winter in England, it's kind of cold and damp, and you have to get up before it's light in the depths of winter to get the kids out of school or to go to work or something. And you won't have this problem, but both my wife and I find it difficult to get up on a morning like that. You know, I know you just leap out of bed with a happy hallelujah, but we find it difficult. And the alarm clock would go off, see, and she would dig me in the ribs with that elbow that wives sharpen for these occasions, you know, and it goes in there right between two ribs. And she would say, get up. And I would say, you get up. And she would say, be reasonable, get up. I would say, what has reason got to do with it? And she would say, look, I got up first yesterday morning. That time in the morning, I don't know who got up first yesterday morning. Unfair. Now I'd say, maybe you did get up first yesterday morning, but then you went to bed first last night, so you get up first this morning. And so it would go till lunchtime, which was kind of, you know. So we solved it. We bought second-hand a wonderful machine called a tea maker. And it sits on a tray right at the side of your bed, and you plug it in, and you set a little dial, and it switches on about half an hour before you want to get up, and it boils some water, and it pours that boiling water onto the tea. It then waits 3 minutes, lights a lamp, and rings an alarm. And you wake up to a pot of freshly made hot tea right there beside the bed. Well, that alarm was sort of strident. It set your nerves on edge, you know. So we disconnected that, and we hooked it up in... You know, it hurt the eyeballs first thing in the morning. So we took the bulb out, and we put in a little pink bulb. Now we wake up in the morning to some gentle music playing, a soft pink glow, a freshly made pot of hot tea right beside the bed, and fight about who's going to pour the tea out. Because it doesn't matter on what level you live, selfishness is selfishness, sin is sin, it spoils, it contaminates. it undermines all relationships. And you suffer from it just as much as I do. But Jesus specializes in making sick people well. And what has probably happened while you've been here is that you've discovered various ways in which that kind of sickness affects your lifestyle. It's become apparent because it causes friction between you and some other people, or maybe just one other person. And they irritate you, and you know exactly what it is about them that irritates you. You know, the way they pick their nose and roll it around the fingers or whatever it is, you know. You know exactly what it is about them that irritates you. But what is it in you that gets irritated with them? And that's what you need to discover. Because every one of us has got this wonderful facility of blaming everybody else except ourselves. And it's not that the other people don't have faults, they do. But we do as well. And if through that situation we can recognize our own particular fault in that area, then we've learned an area of our life that we can bring to Jesus Christ, expose to him, and have him deal with it. And not only through the relationships, probably through classes as well. And perhaps you've been very, very good at excusing yourself and, you know, assuming that this is quite normal the way you are, etc. Nothing to worry about. But there's an area there that needs to be dealt with. And Jesus delights to make sick people well. So we've only had time to look at three miracles. Of course, there are a lot more. And every one of them will follow the same pattern, every miracle of Jesus. But he is your God. He really is. He's done what only God can do. He turns water into wine, feeding the 5,000, healing the leper. Only God can do things like that. Okay? And he says, whatever I see the Father doing, I do as well. Okay? So don't be put off by that very simple human exterior. Jesus Christ really is your God. What can he do for you personally? He can turn the ordinary life into a special one. He can turn the pathetic resources into sufficient. And he can make the sick person healthy. And he loves to do it. And that's what he wants to do for you. Let's pray together.